is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We are still sheltering in place, so we're not at the office, we're not at the demonstration garden, although we're hoping this whole time period is over fairly soon. So we're doing everything by a wonderful method called Zoom. We're all learning how to do Zoom. So we're recording Linda Reevely by Zoom. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. You're looking pretty good.
Well,
I miss you, though.
I do, too. I miss you, too. And Linda, besides being a Tuolumne Master Gardener and also a past president of the Tuolumne Master Gardeners, you are very involved in, let me see if I get the name right, the Sierra Beekeepers Association?
Sierra Foothill Beekeepers Association.
Sierra Foothills Beekeepers Association. Perfect. Yeah. And right now, in our last conversation, you were talking about something that both you and your husband do together, but has kept you busy from March and even through now. And it's okay. Something I would never dream about doing. It sounds very exciting, but what is that?
My husband and I, at our advanced ages, are currently involved in taking bees out of people's structures, or it's just called bee extraction or bee rescue. We also collect swarms, which is totally easy, except sometimes you have to stand on ladders. And not nearly as interesting in many respects or as involved as bee rescue. In order to take bees out of your house, and some people will find that they get bees in a car port or a garage wall or their home, we need to usually cut a hole in the structure and take the bees out of it. There are a lot of things you have to know before you can really do this successfully, because wild bees, like all bees, are kind of delicate creatures, and you have to use a lot of caution and a lot of information on how to do it. You also need some very specialized tools, and the first one of those is a bee vacuum. And the bee vacuum is a device that sucks the bees up, obviously, in such a way that they aren't battered about and killed, but actually just deposited in a beehive that has comb in there for them to climb on and get out of the way of the suction. So we have a bee vacuum. It's electrical, so we have to have power where we go. Sometimes old houses, when you get busy looking in their walls, you really don't want to do it with the power on, because they use knob and tube wiring in old houses, and knob and tube just has naked wires running around that could electrocute you. So we use a generator at that point to run the vacuum. We also have a whole box full of frames, bee boxes, those white boxes everyone sees, right, actually have either plastic or wooden frames inside them that the bees build their comb on. And I take the empty frame and put fishnet on one side of it. I use it with fishing line, and I make a little net to lay the comb on as we cut it out of the structure, and then put rubber bands to hold it in place and put it in a bee box so that the bees, and I do it with the bees all on it, so that the bees will survive. So first thing we've taken to doing, we call it the recon. We go and look at the home or structure where the bees are located. And this year, my husband, Ken, has purchased a infrared camera attachment for his iPhone.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, this is the best little thing. So he holds up the camera and it takes the picture simultaneously with your camera and with the infrared device, and it integrates them in your phone, and you get the infrared pictures with the structure or the pictures on the wall or whatever kind of outlined with like a little fine line. And you can actually see where the bees are in the wall because when bees are raising baby bees, they keep the temperature at 95 degrees plus or minus about a degree. And it's
how
that
did,
way.
How
they do that?
How did they do that?
I know, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? They do that a couple ways. First, let's imagine that it's cool and they need to keep the brood warm. In that case, there are bees who have the capacity to cluster over the comb where the bees are pupating, basically, or where their larva, and they wiggle the little muscles that make their wings work without moving their wings, and this generates heat. It takes a lot.
Oh,
you have
gosh.
To feed them a lot to get them to do that, because, you know, calories in, calories out. But that's how they keep it warm. And when it's hot, like it gets now, we've got sun on the beehive, they bring water from outside and they spread it around and wave their wings over it, and it works just like a swamp cooler.
Oh my gosh, they're little geniuses.
Oh, bees are so amazing. Bees are absolutely totally amazing. But in some respects, they're also predictable, and that makes it easier for us to get them out of walls. We know that they will build comb in any space that is about the size of a 5-gallon water jug, that volume. It doesn't have to be that shape, but it does have to have some open space inside to build sheets of comb so that they can store honey, store pollen, and make bees. And that's what the beehive does.
Where do you find them? I mean, what are some of the areas that
we
you
find
have to
them
rescue
underneath
these?
Porches? We find them underneath, between the floor in your house and the ceiling of the level between it, in that subfloor area. We find them there fairly often. Those are really hard to get rid of because it's so much work to get them out of there. We find them underneath porches, like I said, and in walls. If you have a hole in your wall, bees, and it's got a space inside of an appropriate size, bees will go in there. Bees normally would like to live in our area in oak trees, old oak trees that have had fungus in them that have created a cavity inside the oak tree. And when the bees find that, it's just like, woohoo, penthouse apartment. And so one bee will find it. The first bee in will survey the area. She will crawl around this, sometimes up taking up to 2 hours to decide if it's big enough in the right shape. And if it is, she goes back to the bees that have swarmed, the ones that are hanging outside in a big bunch all calling all over each other. She'll go back there and she'll do the waggle dance that we all learned about in the fourth grade. And she says to other bees, go here and look at this. Other bees will go and look at the hole. And if it's right, they come back and do the waggle dance too. And then even more bees will go. And pretty soon, when the number of bees that say yes is more than the number of bees who either haven't been or say no, it's like a vote. They pick up and they move to the new hole that quick. I mean, it's just instantaneous. It's
wow.
Like, it sounds like a jet airplane when they all fly all off together and they're gone into a hole. Just
oh
like
my
that.
Gosh.
It's so cool. So our job, if that hole happens to be in your house, is to help you get rid of them. Some people don't like them because they're afraid they will hurt them. Some people don't like them because the hole on the outside gets dirty. I mean, you got six, every bee has six little feet. So they bring a lot of dirt home on their little
Never
feet.
Never thought of that.
It's true though. Bees make beautiful bee comb. It's white. And after they all walk on it, it gets dirtier. It's pretty funny.
So the traditional picture that we usually have of beekeepers extracting honey is with the smoke. Do you still smoke?
Smoke is a real interesting thing. When you smoke bees, you're not forcing them out of the hole. People say, smoke them out. That might have worked for, I don't know, the pioneers when the Indians were trying to get them out of their house. Doesn't work too well for bees, because all it does with bees is it completely fouls up their chemical scent recognition. Bees outside migrate by their eyes. They have these eyes that, they have five eyes, you know that? Five. The two big ones we're used to seeing are for up close, and then there's three little ones on top. which basically work by the sun and at far away things. They look, so they have different eyes for looking at different distances. It's bifocals only on bees. And when you use, when they're outside, they use their eyes, but when they're inside, it's all chemical. It's pheromone and it's other chemicals that tell them what's happening in the hive, where they need to go, what they need to do, what the status of everybody is. So when you smoke them, they just kind of hunker down and wait until you either smoke them some more, in which case it says, well, maybe we're on fire and we should eat food and get ready to fly, or maybe we just need to hunker down and get down on our combs and be real still for a few minutes until it's like being drunk.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, when
so,
you're,
when you want to get them out of a house, getting them drunk isn't very useful. It just really isn't. They, once you open up the hive like you do in a house, they become very docile and they will fly around. They'll land on windows and on the curtains of bio windows and stuff. Part of the job of vacuuming them up comes to me. But basically, my husband gets in there and he cuts the pieces of comb out. He hands them to me. I set them in the new frames with rubber bands and drop them in a box with the bees all on them. He vacuums some more bees and until the whole hole is cleaned. And then we carefully cut out everything that's left so that it is absolutely as clean as we can get it. And then we fill it with insulation.
Wow.
And
what
if
a
the
process.
Bees are still, it's a big process. If the bees are still trying to get in, we have some spray that we can spray on that kind of deters them and makes them less interested for a while. The smell goes away very quickly, though. And it's made out of bitter almonds. Like cyanide is also made out of bitter almonds, but it's not cyanide. It's just a particular smell. Like it smells like almond extract. It smells like you're just splashing almond extract everywhere. And then the bees kind of lay off for a while. And you just keep vacuuming up everybody that comes home until you get as many as you can. And then put insulation in the hole, fill it up as tightly as you can with insulation. So there is no hole for them to go back to.
Okay.
And then we take the ones in the box and the ones in the vacuum home. We put the ones in the box down where we want the hive to be. And we put the vacuum box on top of it. And we just let the bees from the top crawl down to the bottom, which they will do. And then a couple of days later, we just take the vacuum box away and we have a new hive. If the queen survived all of this, she starts laying eggs in that comb that I rescued and put in those frames, and we have a new beehive.
That sounds wonderful. That is wonderful. That is great work. Now, Linda, we're just about out of time. Do you want to tell everybody if you've got a bee problem, how to get a hold of
absolutely
you know, how to get a hold of you
if
guys?
If you have a bee problem, go to the Sierra Foothill, no S, Foothill Beekeepers with an S Association online. It's at .com at the end of it. And find the phone number. There is a phone number prominently displayed. Call that number. If no one answers, leave a message and the message will be delivered either to our house or to another fellow who lives here in Sonora who will ultimately either come and help you or get back to us. And we will come and look at your bee problem. We actually charge because we have to rehouse those bees, and each beehive with a top and a bottom and the stuff that goes inside costs a little over $200. So we do charge a little bit, but it's better than having bees because bees can destroy your house.
Wow.
They make water mm-hmm. and from their bodies and the wax and everything, even if you kill them, don't spray them and try to kill them yourself. If you kill them in the wall, you will have the equivalent to, I don't know, 30 pounds of dead fish in your wall. It reeks, it will rot, it will stain your walls, it's disgusting, and then other insects come and mice will come to clean up the mess you've made. And other bees will come and carry that poison you spread to their beehives and you'll kill bees in your neighborhood. Please don't try to kill them with spray yourself.
That is great advice. Great advice, yep, Linda. And we did run out of time. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
It's always fun to talk to you.
All right.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM, Sonora, California.
Everybody, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm at the office here in San Andreas in Calaveras County, and I'm talking to one of our farm advisors named Lynn Wunderlich. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Debbie.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Now, I said you're a farm advisor, but actually you have, is it considered a specialty or a focus as far as what you give advice to?
Well, my title is actually farm advisor. I've kept it kind of general,
okay.
But I specialize in perennial crops grown in the foothills. So primarily wine grapes, since that's the largest acreage of perennial crops grown. We have about, so in the foothills, I mean the four counties that
right. The
UC Cooperative Extension serves across the foothills. That includes El Dorado, Amador, Calaveras, and Tuolumne counties.
Which is a huge physical area
to
cover.
Yes,
so
it is.
So it's pretty amazing.
And interestingly, geographically diverse. But across those four counties, I work with primarily, as I said, wine grapes, but also tree crops. So
okay. In
that little area, you may have heard of Apple Hill in El Dorado County.
Yes, I've been there. It's lovely.
Yes. Apples and pears. You know, pears have been replaced largely by wine grapes, but pears, there's still a few, and stone fruit, some blueberries. I also talk to people about their olives for oil.
Oh, that's been a huge resurgence, I mean, in mm-hmm. the foothills.
Mm-hmm.
People are...
There's interest in,
right. In
boutique olive oils. And Christmas trees.
Oh, my gosh.
So I help answer questions related to those crops. And my research program primarily focuses on issues that, in wine grapes right now.
Okay, so one of the things I've heard you talk to us about is some of the different pests that can affect wine grapes and also diseases.
Yes.
So there's, I mean, you've got a huge amount of knowledge that you've got to keep track of, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because people who don't farm sometimes mistakenly think that it's an easy task to grow a premium quality, you know, crop. And the truth is there's a lot of hard work that goes into it. And a good portion of that is thinking about your pest management. So in wine grapes, the primary disease is powdery mildew.
Oh, sure.
And powdery mildew affects all varieties. Every year.
Every single commercial variety?
Every commercial variety around the world. This is the number one disease. And but the good thing is that we have some research-based information that helps us manage this disease in the best way possible. And that is a weather-related index to help growers to tell growers when to spray.
Is this fairly new?
The powdery mildew index has been around for a long time.
Okay.
But I've been working for the past, oh, I think 8 years to get these weather stations in the foothills.
Oh.
So now we actually have these weather stations in the foothills. They're called powdery mildew index stations.
Great.
And they differ a little bit than a regular weather station in that the temperature sensor is placed in the grape canopy. So it's taking the temperature in the canopy, and then they all those stations, and we have 7 stations now.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. We don't have a station in Tuolumne County yet.
Oh, shucks.
We need to find funds and someone to host a station there.
Okay.
But we have 2 in Calaveras. Okay, so there's one located at Ironstone, and there's one also in...
is it Murphy's?
No,
Murphy's
no,
area?
Up above.
Okay, even higher up, Arnold?
No,
too high.
Towards Amador.
Toward
Amador. I'm forgetting the name of the town right now.
It's not as remote as West Point or Railroad.
It's West Point.
It's West Point.
Yes, West Point.
I was thinking that had to be too remote.
Yeah, and so the Calaveras Wine Alliance, which is a great group of growers and wine industry folks, they got a grant and used some of their grant funding to host these stations. These stations are pretty heavy duty, so they're not like rinky-dink weather stations. They have substantial scientific Campbell Scientific hardware.
Oh, good.
And then I've leveraged the funds that growers have contributed to the installing these stations by getting the information to be posted publicly for free on the UCIPM website.
Oh, that's wonderful. So anybody has access to it.
Anybody has access to this powdery mildew index information. And those stations, what they do is they collect information on temperature, which is the primary driver of this powdery mildew disease.
Okay.
And it turns out that powdery mildew likes temperatures kind of like humans do. It's like 70 to 85 degrees is the sweet spot for
that's what I like.
Powdery mildew. And if it gets too hot, the mildew grows slower.
Okay, and we should mention for anybody that's listening that has never seen powdery mildew, what does it look like? I mean, I'm sure just about everybody has seen it.
Right. Well, there's different species, so it also does attack roses.
Okay.
So if there's any rose growers out there, they might have seen it. But that is a different species. So it's a white, it presents itself as kind of a white fuzzy mat on the leaves. It attacks all parts, green parts of the vine.
Right.
And it attacks the fruit.
Okay.
So I guess to the untrained eye, it's hard to see the very first infection.
Sure.
And
But if you let it get out of control, then it's easier to spot.
Right. And unfortunately, yes, then it's a little late. So we use preventative fungicides, and some of these are organically approved.
Oh, nice.
Like sulfur.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's choices for all different types of fungicides to use. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is for growers to spray at the right time, and they can look on the UCIPM website.
Okay.
And if you just Google UCIPM, you can find that website pretty easily.
Sure.
And then you look under on the left, on the homepage of UCIPM, down on the left it'll say weather models.
Oh,
and you click
okay.
on that. And it'll run, it runs the powdery mildew index starting at bud break. So I let them know when bud break is.
Because
that's when we start thinking about disease.
Right.
And typically bud break for grapes in the foothills is about April 1st.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the grapes are susceptible until they reach about 8-10% Brix. So after veraison or after the fruit turns color.
Okay.
Luckily for us, the fruit is no longer susceptible. But up until then, there's, depending on the weather, there's a number of sprays that typically need to go on to protect the fruit from powdery mildew.
So at what temperature would you say you don't have to worry about powdery mildew? Or that you would have to spray again?
Well, as I said, the sweet spot is from 70 to 85 degrees. And the index simplifies that whole thing for you, and it puts it at a scale from 0 to 100.
Okay.
So anything above 60 on the powdery mildew index scale says very high risk for infection. And all that means is that the temperature is right for the mildew to sporulate every 7 days. New spores are being produced every 5 to 7 days. That's the highest risk.
And spores are something you can't see with the naked eye.
No, you can't see them with, right.
They're it's teeny, not like teeny, checking tiny. For bugs.
Right, right. I know.
Is so difficult.
It is. And we've kind of been toying around, and there are a few small companies now working in Napa and Sonoma especially with this spore trapping. Mm-hmm. So imagine, like you said, if we could trap the spores, the invisible spores,
sure,
of fungus to tell us when disease is present, just like we trap for moths.
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be really cool. And so somebody else has thought of this,
okay.
Not just us. And so spore trapping is now something that is being done. And as I said, it's commercial, and they put out these basically just a microscope slide type of thing, or a little glass rod, and catch spores. But of course, to detect those spores, you need a trained laboratory,
sure,
that has the right detection tools,
okay,
to look for mildew. So there is that, but pretty much what we assume to be on the safe side, since hardly anybody traps for spores.
This is the first that I heard.
Is we just assume powdery mildew is present.
Okay.
And especially if a grape grower has had mildew the year before, maybe they were fighting it, they ended up just having a little bit of mildew, then those vineyards are more likely to have it right away in the beginning of the season. So they need to be extra careful.
Does that mean that the spores stay there? I mean,
they do. They overwinter.
Okay.
So there's an overwintering type of spore. So that's and it's hardened. So
okay.
It's a type of spore that allows the fungus to survive the winter conditions.
Wow.
And those are typically washed off with rain, and they settle into the cracks and crevices of grape bark and grape cordons.
So they're there.
They're there.
They're there.
They're there. And they emerge, when temperature is right, and with rain. So they only, you only need rain to get the cycle started in the very beginning of the season.
Oh my gosh.
And then after that, this other type of spore called conidia, these conidial spores are produced, frequently as 5 to 7 days, but it depends on the weather.
Okay.
Just to get back to your original question, so I was saying there's this powdery mildew index from 0 to 100 that growers can look on the UCIPM website and see the stations in their neighborhood. And there's two in Calaveras. There's two in Amador. And there's three in El Dorado County.
Gosh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That really is.
It is, and they can look. And so if the index is below 40, they have longer interval in between sprays because it's taking longer for the fungus to reproduce.
Well, would the fungus be inactive at 40 degrees? I mean,
no,
it's still present.
The index is 40.
Oh, the index is 40. Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember the limit. I think it slows down growth less than 54 degrees. I'm trying to remember.
Oh,
and then also when it gets too hot, and that's often the case, obviously, in our summers. It gets blazing hot.
Right.
So when temperatures get, 90, 95, that fungus has stopped growing. It's still there.
So meaning it's still alive.
Yeah.
It's still alive, but it's not maybe
reproducing.
Okay, and that's the key, is it is not reproducing, so there isn't more of it happening.
Right. It's complicated, actually. So, yeah.
You know what?
That's,
it is complicated.
So that's why we have the index, and that's why
we
have the stations up, and hopefully people are using them. The other cool thing about the stations is that they all have rain gauges.
Great.
So
you can check for how much rainfall.
We can look and see the different rain accumulation across the foothills. And I haven't done that
You know what? And that is fascinating. But I hate to tell you, Lynn, I'm wondering if you can give some of your information if people have questions to contact you, because we're just about out of time for this segment.
Oh, sure. Yes. Well, you can get a hold of me. My name's Lynn Wunderlich. And my office is in Placerville. But as we said, I do serve the Sonora, Tuolumne County, all of Tuolumne County,
right,
and Calaveras County as well. And you can call me at 530-621-5505. That number again is 530-621-5505. Or you can look on our UC Cooperative Extension Central Sierra website. And that's cecentralsierra.ucanr.edu.
And they can find you under contacts or
I think it's under About Us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Lynn. This has been fascinating.
You bet. We'll talk again, I hope.
We will. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.